From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. Good morning, I'm Rachel Miro. State Senate Republicans have rejected a $7 billion proposal to boost medical care for prison inmates. The massive medical facility construction plan had the backing of the governor, but Republican lawmakers objected to the price tag and argued the measure may not mesh well with other plans pending to reduce prison overcrowding. Democrats say federal judges monitoring state prisons may move to take the matter out of lawmakers' hands. The court-appointed federal receiver who came up with a construction plan might seek a court order to open the state's coffers, but he calls that a last resort. The bill's author is calling for a second vote tomorrow. When San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House in January of last year, she promised top-to-bottom changes, starting with ethics reform. In part two of his analysis of her first term as Speaker, the California Report's Scott Schaefer examines how Pelosi overcame resistance to change within her own party.
There are two kinds of change in politics, substantive policy changes and changes of image. Soon after Democrats took control of the House last year, Nancy Pelosi sent a signal that was both symbolic and substantive, a sign that changes in environmental policy were coming. In the cafeteria of the Longworth House office building on Capitol Hill, there's no more styrofoam. It's been banned. Plastic forks, knives, and spoons have been replaced by utensils made of corn products. The seafood sold complies with sustainable fishing standards, and more of the produce is organic and bought locally.
What the speaker wanted is to lead by example and show people that it can be done, that it's the right thing to do, and that it's easy to do.
Perry Plumart is deputy director of the new Greening the Capitol office. Under his watch, all food service waste is sent here behind the cafeteria to a giant garbage disposal called a pulper.
For the most part, what we're finding is that about 90% of what's in the cafeteria is compostable.
These changes and others came as Speaker Pelosi worked to enact comprehensive energy legislation, including higher mileage standards for American-made cars and trucks. Getting that done meant Pelosi had to either win over or get around Michigan Congressman John Dingell, the automaker's staunchest advocate in Congress. Dingell, who was first elected when Dwight Eisenhower was president, threatened to derail the whole thing. Pelosi sent Dingell a warning shot, creating a new committee with a different chair, one loyal to her environmental agenda. Pelosi's unrelenting pressure wore the 81-year-old Dingell down. Ultimately, Pelosi prevailed with Dingell's support, and Congress overwhelmingly passed energy independence legislation that President Bush signed last December. Philip Clapp of the Pew Environmental Trust.
She got through the House the first increase in auto fuel efficiency standards in 30 years, and I've worked on that issue for the entire 30 years, all the way back when I worked on Capitol Hill, and she was the one that made it happen.
Clapp is impressed that Pelosi had the guts to take on a powerful committee chair like Dingell and win.
It did not surprise me that she pulled it off. I think that it really shocked a number of members who had been in the House a lot longer than she has.
Pelosi's tangle with Chairman Dingell made it clear she's willing to take on the old bulls of the House. But the Speaker says that wasn't the point.
On the subject of CAFE standards, reducing the emissions into the air. It wasn't about Mr. Dingell. It was about the children of America, my grandchildren, everybody's grandchildren, that they would live in an environment that was cleaner.
When Pelosi talks about the children, it's a reminder that this mother of five often takes an eat-your-spinach approach to lawmaking. That's exactly what she did on ethics reform, getting resistant lawmakers to accept changes they didn't want, saying they were good for Congress. Democrats took over when Congress was under a cloud from the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal. Pelosi pledged to reduce the ties between lobbyists and legislators, or at least make those relationships more transparent. And she did. Pelosi even created an independent panel of outsiders to investigate alleged misconduct by members of Congress. Fred Wertheimer of the nonpartisan government reform group Democracy 21 has been calling for lobbying and ethics changes for 37 years.
She lobbied her colleagues. She cajoled them when it was necessary. She reasoned with them when it was necessary, and she forced the issue.
Of course, not everyone gives Pelosi such glowing reviews. Republicans in Congress complain that high-profile votes to support stem cell research and impose higher taxes on oil companies went nowhere and were simply intended to embarrass them and President Bush. They also accuse Pelosi of doing what she complained they did, stifling input into legislation from the minority party. Republican Congressman Dan Lundgren from Sacramento says he had hoped the new speaker would usher in a more collegial era.
When you come in with the steel hammer of partisanship so many times, you force the minority to be more unified than they otherwise might be, and you don't get that area of compromise which allows you to get more things done.
When I tell Pelosi she's described as a steel hammer, or a velvet fist, as others call it, she closes her eyes and winces.
I thought I had more finesse than that. I didn't know there was, they knew there was a hammer there. I don't think of myself as a velvet hammer, is that what it was? I like the velvet part better. I always say we start with the velvet, see where we go from there.
Despite Pelosi's reputation as a liberal, she's run the speaker's office as a pragmatist. For example, gay rights groups complained loudly last year when Pelosi stripped job protections for transgender workers out of an anti-discrimination bill. Pelosi simply said the votes weren't there and that some job protections for gay and lesbian workers were better than none. Still, Republican political operatives continue to paint Pelosi as a San Francisco liberal in congressional campaigns against Democrats running in more conservative districts. But Pelosi, a devout Catholic, just shrugs it off, quoting the Song of St. Francis, for whom her city is named.
Where there's despair, bring hope. Where there's hatred, bring love. Where there's darkness, bring light. And that's the spirit in which I serve as Speaker of the House, proud to be from San Francisco.
Even Pelosi's critics say she's now firmly in control of her caucus, secure in her position as speaker. Between now and November, her top agenda item is to expand her party's majority in Congress and help a Democrat win the White House. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
If you missed part one of Schaefer's Pelosi profile, you can listen to it online at californiareport.org. For that matter, make sure you don't miss any story. Sign up for our podcast on the website or look for us on iTunes. That's the California Report for Wednesday, May 28th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Endowment, working to build healthier communities that support children, youth, and families. Online at www.calendow.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995.